Hello and welcome to today's podcast. It's our great pleasure today to have with us Jos Notemans, Business Manager of Digital Inks at SPG Prints. SPG Prints has a long history of textile printing. Founded in 1947 and originally known as Stork Prints, the company first entered the textile market in 1953 with a flatbed textile printing machine. In 1963, SPG Prints launched the groundbreaking RD1, together with the world's first seamless circular screen. And for the first time, high-speed textile printing was possible. And it's these innovations that were the foundations, thus enabling mass production across the globe. In 1991, SPG Prints launched the first digital textile printing machine. And that was just the beginning of three decades of digital innovations that would lead us to where we are today as the digital textile sector expands to challenge rotary production. Jos, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. You're welcome.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm sure we could talk all day, but we have perhaps 30, 40 minutes. So I will crack on with our first question. Jos, can you give us an insight into your career path within the digital textile industry and the history of SPG Prints and their digital innovations?
Sure, and as you mentioned in the introduction, we launched the rotary textile printing a little over 70 years ago, and actually in the mid-80s, Stork, as it was called at that time, did a study if there would ever be a technology that would replace the rotary printing, then they wanted to own that technology as well. The outcome of that study was that the expectation was that by the year 2000, all textile printing in the world would happen digitally with inkjet. So they decided to start an inkjet project in 1987 to develop digital textile printing with inkjet. And I joined the company in 1989 as a student from university. Sticked around since then. So I was almost at the birth of our digital textile printing. I was part of the team at the introduction of 1991, the first textile printing machine. We had a parallel path at that time to also develop the technology for graphic printing, where I spent most of my time in the 90s. But then the early 2000s, I got responsible for the textile developments as well. And at that time, it was already the year 2000 when it was predicted that everything would be digital. But in fact, only 1% at that time was digital. So the study was 99% off. But still, the expectation was that one day it would all be digital. And I developed a strategy at that time, and we wanted to prove to the world that digital printing could already, in small volumes, be a production technology. And to prove that, we founded a digital printing plant in Thailand, which I ran from 2002 until 2007, and then turned back to Holland to run the business as it was as it is today. And being development of inks, but also development of machines. Meanwhile, about 8% of the total volume is done digital. That means that the business has grown significantly. So we decided 1.5 years ago to split the sales responsibility for machines and inks. And I focus on that part on the ink side. But on the strategical path, I'm involved in both the machines as well as the inks for strategy going forward.
So can you tell us about some of your innovations then, Jos? Could you talk about the groundbreaking, the Arch technology, the Pike and the Javelin solutions?
Like I mentioned, we are now already 30 years in this business, and being a user of the technology in the factory in Thailand, I had a hands-on experience on what does the customer need. And I wanted to translate that back to the products that we were making, because one of the disadvantages that we were experiencing is that basically all inkjet technology has been developed for the graphic arts business. And the graphical printing market is much bigger than the textile printing market, and is much more digitally advanced. So all the printers and all the print heads were basically graphic arts oriented developments.
Okay.
Whether you look at Epson print heads, or you look at Kyocera print heads, or you look at Seiko print heads, Ricoh print heads, it was all for graphics. So when we started to talk about growing digital printing to higher production volumes, it was apparent that we need to develop a technology which is more aimed towards textiles. To mention a few very simple examples, when you print on paper, paper is flat and paper is non-stretching. So the machines were designed, and the heads were designed to be able to be very close to the substrate. Textile is a three-dimensional thing that is also stretching. It is hairy. So putting print heads very close to the surface of the print of the fabric is a danger, because it will touch the heads, which will limit the lifetime of the heads.
Yes.
So when we were developing a real textile application, we said we need to have a head which can be further away from the surface of the fabric that you are printing. This is just only one example, but we made a whole list of requirements that really is needed to print digital textiles. And that was the basis of what we call Archer technology. So basically, it was the first real effort to make a digital printing which is fully aimed to print textiles. We also saw that one of from all the discussions we have with customers is that digital technology is developing quite fast. And if you're talking about single pass printing and you're talking about investments of 2 to 3 million euros for a machine, then the customer said to us, well, I don't want to spend 3 million in a technology which is going to be obsolete in a few years. So they wanted to have a base technology which was independent of the print head. So in other words, if a better print head comes out in 2 or 3 years from now, my machine should be able that I can keep my machine and I only change the print head. So that's why we defined Archer technology as being print head independent.
Okay.
We started with the Fujifilm Samba print head, and that is still on the machines today. But if another print head comes out that performs better, then we can change the Archer technology. Everything stays the same, only the print head changes. So the Archer technology is not only the print head, it's also the ink delivery system. It's the whole electronics behind it. It's the mechanical structure on which you mount the heads. So the total digital solution is what we call Archer technology.
Very interesting. And Jos, how have the speeds changed in that time? As the head technology has evolved, how has the speed changed?
Of course, this is a point which is has always been a very important one. You mentioned that in 1991, we launched the first machine. That machine was able to print 1 square meter digitally per hour.
Yeah.
And we were showing this to rotary printers, our traditional customer. And a rotary printing machine runs 40 to 80 meters per minute. So we were far, far away. But, of course, it was still a revolution, because you could print something on a fabric without a screen. And you have to imagine, in 1991, that was 4 years before Windows 95 came out. So we didn't have color monitors. And actually, the designs that we were printing, we could not even show on a computer monitor. So we were programming pixels. And the first time we really saw what we made was when we printed it. But of course, those rotary customers, they were telling us, look, we need the speed of a rotary machine. And we said, yeah, eventually we will go there. But we had to go from 1 square meter per hour to 40 meters per minute. And this this took us 25 years to get there. But the Pike that we launched on the ITMA in 2015 was actually printing 40 meters per minute. And then the rotary customer finds out that actually the capacity of such a machine is much higher than a rotary machine. Because a rotary machine... effectively in Europe is only printing 25 to maximum 35% of the time. The rest of the time, the machine is not printing because you are changing the screens, you are washing the machine, whatever, but there's no uptime. Where with a digital machine, you can print at least 20 hours a day.
Yeah, you've got no downtime.
20 meters a minute at 20 hours a day and let's say 300 days a year brings you easily to something like 15 million meters per year per machine, where a rotary machine only between brackets, there's a few million meters.
Yeah.
So we said you don't need a higher speed than 40 meters per minute. But of course, it's like with cars. Here in Holland now, the maximum speed is 100 kilometers per hour. And still everybody has cars that can drive 180 kilometers per hour or even more. And it's still a desire to have faster cars. So the same is here applicable. Still people are looking at what is the top speed of the printer. Although the average, the cruising speed they will use it is a lot less.
Yes.
So at the ITMA 2019 last year in Barcelona, where I was giving the presentations about our bike, I made the statement, look, the speed is not the discussion item anymore. So the discussion is moving from print quality and speed, like we did in the first 25 years of development. It's now moving to cost per meter, reliability, and of course, sustainability.
Yes.
So there's a changing focus of requirements from our customers. Speed is a given, quality is a given. You cannot, you're not part of the game if your quality is not good and your speed is not good.
Absolutely. There can be no difference between the two, can there?
Yeah.
They have to be like for like. That kind of brings us on nicer to the next question, actually, because I think, you know, from my perspective, one of the other things that held back the innovation really was inks, wasn't it? In the early days, ink consistencies,
yes,
et cetera, and against head technology for continuity to stop dropouts, block all of those things, blockages. So interestingly, in 2011, SPG opened their new ink factory and they expanded that again in 2017. Could you tell us, Jos, how your inks have advanced over the years and which printing applications they serve?
Yeah, well, I was mentioning in the beginning we had 1 square meter per hour, and at the turn of the century we were at about 20 square meters per hour. That was that at that time what the industry could do. So if you look at the ink factories that at that time were making the inks, were basically just R&D labs that were producing a little bit more quantity than a sample. But in terms of the total amount of dyes used in the world, it was nothing. Mm-hmm. So prices of inks were very high for several reasons. One of the reasons being that the companies producing inks, they were buying dyes in such small quantities that they were paying already a very high price to purchase those dyes.
Yep.
And then the second thing is that the dyes that you can use in rotary printing as they were, you cannot use in a digital ink because they are far too impure. Mm-hmm. So you have to purify the inks in order to take out all the salts and the metal ions that are no problem in a rotary machine, but are a big problem in printheads. They destroy the printheads.
Okay.
So the manufacturing process of the inks was also more expensive. And then the economy of scale in the production itself also was very high. So at the turn of the century, 1 kilo of ink was still costing about 125 euros. By the way, when we launched in 1991, 1 kilo of ink was 700 euros. So we went from 700 to 125 by the turn of the century. Nowadays, if you look at the large volume customers, they are paying 15 euros per kg and sometimes even less. But still, the customers are seeing it's more than what I pay for a kilo of paste. So they are still pushing that the price goes down.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, the contribution of the inks in the total price to print a meter is still considerable, but it's by far not the largest anymore, although a lot of customers still think it is. But if I have a discussion with a customer in a negotiation about a €1 difference between what he wants to have and what I'm offering, then I'm telling him that they all know that they are using less than 10 grams per square meter.
Yeah.
So that means with 1 kilo of ink, you can print 100 square meters at least. So €1 price difference translates to 1 euro cent per square meter. So I'm telling the customer, as soon as you have your total process of pre-treatment, printing, steaming, washing, finishing,
yeah,
under control within 1 cent per square meter, then you have a point in negotiating about with me about this 1 cent and this €1. But if you take an ink which damages your print heads a little bit faster, and you have a printer with a Kyocera print head on it, which is costing €5,000 each, and you have a printer which, well, at least 8 heads, but in many cases 16 or even 32 heads are on it, then you can imagine how much square meters you have to print with an ink to make up for this 1 cent per square meter that you might save taking an ink which might damage your heads a little bit faster. So looking at the total cost of ownership is becoming very important in digital, but it's a way of thinking that many customers are not used to.
It is. It's a mindset, isn't it?
A rotary machine, of course, depending on the amount of colors that you are buying, because each color means an extra station where mm-hmm. you can put a rotary screen. But these machines are in euros, a couple of hundred thousand euros, from 400 to 800,000. So
okay,
to put it in perspective, for one single pass machine, you can buy 3 rotary machines.
Okay.
But that's just the investment on the machine. You can imagine a question that often comes to us is the break-even point between rotary and digital. It's depending mm-hmm. on a lot of factors, but rule of the thumb, as you can also read in one of my blogs, it is between 1,000 and 4,000 meters. So in other words, if you have to print less than 1,000 meters, digital is always cheaper, purely on cost. If you have to print more than 5,000 meters of a design, rotary will always be cheaper, purely on cost. In between those run lengths, which is the common run length, it is depending on those factors whether you go rotary or digital, but then also other things come to play, because some things you can only print in rotary and not in digital, and the other way around.
Yeah.
So just saying there is an automatic procedure that you have to follow to find out whether you have to do rotary or digital, it's not there. It's depending on a lot of factors that you all have to take into account before you can decide, do I go to rotary or do I go to digital?
Okay, so there are such incredible innovations, aren't they? And like you say, it's about changing a mindset, really, because people make direct comparisons to rotary all of the time, but it's a completely different ball game, isn't it? Now, as you say, you look at total cost of ownership, all of the other factors, energy, water, the whole sustainability side of textile printing.
Yeah.
Digital applications deliver that, don't they? So it's also moving to digital is very much as well about being future safe and preparing for the time when everybody is now going to be accountable for, you know, the carbon per meter, the water usage, everything's all going to be measured very, very soon. Would you agree, Jos?
Yeah, it is. And we see that companies are searching to who can give me a independent advice, what is the best time for me to invest in digital, and what would be my best investment. And the challenge there is that if you talk to somebody who is selling digital printers, he will give you all kind of arguments to bring you to digital. We do have the advantage that we make both. Often we are customers to ask us whether we are colored in promoting or maybe even defending our rotary business. Of course, that would be a stupid idea to only do that, because if we don't offer digital, then somebody else will do. To put it in perspective, our conventional rotary business is still growing. And many people do not believe that. They think that digital is taking a rotary business. And yes, for a part it is doing, but at the same time, rotary itself is still growing. Because if you look over the years, the total mm-hmm. printed volume in the world is more or less going in the same ratio as the growth of the world population, which is 1.5% per year. So there's about 32 billion square meters printed, textile printed each year. And that's growing with 1.5%. And that 1.5% of 32 billion is more than the 20% that digital is growing each year. So both businesses are growing, and we really position ourselves to try to give as independent possible advice to the customer, what is the right moment for you to step into digital. And we do see that now things like sustainability become more and more an important parameter. So you cannot calculate everything. Eh? Some things are also, you cannot define in numbers. I can calculate what would be the best car for me to drive purely on a cost per kilometer. But of course, also, can I afford such a car? Eh? Mercedes, why were all the taxis in Holland Mercedes? Because per kilometer, Mercedes is the cheapest car. But you have to have the money to buy one. And so there's a lot of more factors in it. The taste, do I like the car, yes or no? In cars is an important thing. Maybe in digital printers it's less of an issue. But there is a lot of factors coming into play that you need to ask yourself, how important is this for me, when you decide where you do your investments.
So do you think we're going to find kind of an equilibrium, some kind of a natural balance between the two as time marches forward, between rotary and digital?
Yeah, that's a good question. When I was at the beginning of my career, and when I was responsible for digital, and I was giving presentations, I always told the audience that I hope that by the time I retire, everything will be digital. Now I always say that I think that will not happen. There will always remain a digital, conventional side of the business. And by default, when people think about digital, they think about, let's say, look at the photography, it became 100% digital. Music became almost 100% digital, but now you see a revival of the vinyl records. But default, when people hear the word digital, they think it will be the new technology. I personally think that equilibrium that you were asking, it will be around 20-30% of the volume will be digital. The rest will stay conventional for a long time, purely for the fact that it is by far the most cost effective. If you go to Pakistan and you visit the large printers of bedding, bed sheets, it's so economical that digital can, even if the inks would be for free and the print heads would live forever, then still digital is more expensive to print. So that business will remain conventional.
It's interesting as well, isn't it, when you look at it by product sector too, because of course square meterage in bed linen is a big factor. You know, you're printing on wide width machines, there's a lot of cloth in every single bed linen piece. So, you know, the price per square meter is absolutely fundamental in an established marketplace.
Yeah, I heard once from a Pakistan customer of ours who was printing a single person bed sheet. So, but even in a single person bed sheet, you're talking about around 7 meters of fabric that is printed, and they are you can buy such a set in a store, in the cheap stores in the US, for $10. So that even if there would be no margin at all in the whole chain, it would mean a little over $1, what is it, 20 per square meter, all in fabric printing and everything. It's incredible that they can do that.
And also that particular product as well, if you look at the bed linen market, the price of completed bed linen set in a packet has dropped dramatically over the last 20 years. It used to be much more expensive to purchase. It's now much cheaper to purchase than it was years ago.
Personally, I think that that will not go on forever, and it may be even so that that now also in what we are now experiencing with the COVID times, that people start to realize that at some points we were doing ridiculous things without even realizing it. I'm not talking about my own business now, but how easy we could decide to go for a long weekend to Barcelona, or even we as business travelers going to China for 4 days. And we found that perfectly normal. And now we start to think it's not that normal. And I was talking to my kids about if you tell them about how very cheap products are made, and then they start to realize that it's not normal. And I even have the feeling that our children are more willing to pay extra for clothing that they know has been produced in a sustainable way than maybe my generation was willing to do. Because they realize it's the planet that they have to live for the next 60 years.
Exactly. You didn't question the purchase, did you? You just thought, oh, that's a good buy. But you didn't actually question how it got to that margin, how it got to that price point, and what were the shortcuts, as you say?
Yeah, I think we are now getting more. We start to realize the value more, and also we start to realize that the way it is produced has a big impact. And so maybe in all the bad things of these times, it's maybe a little bit a reset in thinking for maybe even for humanity. It sounds a little bit dramatic. I don't want to be that dramatic, but I think you get my point. I think there is.
I think you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right. We're all becoming much, much more aware of the total cost of the products that we purchase. And I think you're right. I think the next generation, I see it in my own family too, are much, much more aware of where things come from. And they also, my own children naturally sell things on, and they do look to recycle and upcycle, et cetera, et cetera. So we've got a complete changing mindset coming through too. Yeah. And I guess on the back of that, what you're also going to see in it is that just as digital is such a clean technology, you know, rotary can also clean itself up as well. I mean, I'm not talking about the actual process of printing. It's the effluent, isn't it? The treatment, the water recycling, just printing it using being much more clean with the technologies and the huge, huge factories that are producing the mass. They can become much, much more sustainable. And I believe many, many of them are doing out in the Far East as well, and billions of pounds invested in water treatment plants and all sorts of things to clean up that side of the textile process, which, of course, printing is only a small part of the problem in textiles. Most of the issue is actually before that, isn't it? It's actually in the preparing of the fibres, the weaving, and the finishing, the bleaching and scouring and all of that. That's where majority of the toxins and the waste as regards water, etc., and energy is coming from.
Yeah, but whatever that's correct. Yeah, and you see that even a company like ours, we are looking at what can we contribute with the products that we are making. And I was mentioning before, our conventional business is still growing, and that also means that we are still doing R&D, we're still doing research and development. And last year we launched a new screen technology which reduces the usage of printing paste, so you can print the same quality fabric with less printing paste by using a different screen technology. That is our contribution with our conventional products to reduce the footprint of textile. Because you're probably aware that textile is the second most polluting industry in the world, so we should not act like holy saints. We are improving, but we are still a polluting industry. So we have to work on together with all the people that are making fabrics and machines to make fabrics, everybody has to contribute to reduce that footprint. And that is happening, as you are mentioning. If you look now at the ruling also in Asia regarding sustainability, it's incredible. But it's good. I'm happy about it.
Yeah, it is. They're all forward. They're all steps forward, and at speed as well. I think now there's a huge acceleration, I think, in the sustainability objectives of all the huge players out there.
Yeah.
I would hope. Josh, that kind of brings us on to our next question, really, as well. In hybrid production, using both analog and digital technologies, why are people doing that?
Well, actually, I think that, I think almost all of our customers are actually those hybrid production companies. Mm-hmm. When digital came up in the 90s, we were showing digital to our rotary customers, but at that point in time, and I'm now putting it a little bit black and white, but just to paint a picture, in the 90s, the customers told us, look, your technology is fantastic, but it's far too slow, so please come back when it's faster. So they mostly stay with their rotary production. Then in the zeros, we saw that companies who were never into printing, they started 100% digital printing because they were seeing a market that nobody was filling. So they became very successful, and there were a lot of, let's say, relatively small printing houses doing maybe 50 to 100,000 meters per year. But they were selling at very good prices, and they made very nice businesses with it. Then by the end of the zeros, when the technology got faster, the original textile printing companies got interested again. So in between, let's say, 2010 and now, more and more of the rotary companies started to also invest in digital. And so today, almost all rotary printing companies that are, especially the ones that are exporting, if I look at the Asian side, they're all doing also digital. So they're all hybrid, and I think they will remain hybrid. They will always have both production techniques, and their request is to be as flexible as possible. When they get an order from their customer, they should be able to decide, do I go rotary or do I go digital? And obviously to us, they ask us then, can you help us that maybe we start in digital and then move to rotary? That's why I've also spent some blocks on that subject, because these are the questions that are coming on the table today. So I expect for the foreseeable future, it will always be both technologies going hand in hand.
Moving forwards together.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That's great. Okay. Where do you see the biggest growth markets, Jos, for industrial scale digital printing by location? Do you see industrial scale digital printing out in the Far East?
Yes, the Far East is a fast growing in digital. Mm-hmm. But you have to keep in mind that with the situation of today, to make industrial printing, you need a full setup, which for a large part is conventional. The whole pretreatment of fabrics is a conventional process done on a stamper. Steaming mm-hmm. and washing is still necessary with most of the printing technologies. It's conventional stuff, but also finishing the fabric app, putting it over the center to bring it to the right width, to make it straight of yarn. All are conventional things where you need the infrastructure, and that infrastructure is mainly in the traditional textile countries. So that's not only the Far East, but there's also countries like Turkey, but in Brazil, there's a lot of conventional printing. So these are all growth areas. For us, it's Asia. The big countries are China, Pakistan, India, Turkey, Brazil. That's the top five. There is a trend of reshoring happening, because especially the fast fashion is requiring that the production is closer to the end customer. and then producing in China very fast on a digital way only makes sense if you then bring it by plane to the customer.
Yeah.
Because if it has to sit on the boat for 4 weeks, the whole advantage of fast fashion is gone. But moving fabric by plane, of course, is more expensive. So then the customer has to pay for it.
Especially at the moment.
But personally, I wonder how fast fashion will develop in the coming years because of what we were just discussing. I think the awareness is getting higher that fast fashion is not the best solution for humanity and environment. I don't know how that will develop going forward. So I think the future will be, yes, there is some reshoring taking place already to serve this fast fashion market, but still, to my view, the biggest growth for our business going forward is in the five countries I was just mentioning.
In the volume sector.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, as we see that kind of the increasing creativity, the increasing design diversity, I guess that's where digital is going to score because it's going to take orders from rotary production because the volume's not there. The volume is there collectively, but it's not there as a singular print where you would cut screens to get max meterage.
Yeah, it's like I said before, those technologies will continue to be there as an option of choice for the printing companies, but also for the brands. And I calculated in 2019 that our customers were already printing more than 50 million meters digital for Inditex, Zara. And so that is an amount of meters that many people, when they first look at digital, didn't realize that so many meters are already printed digital for one brand. Of course, they are one of the big drivers of the fast fashion industry.
They certainly are. It's about design diversity, isn't it?
Yeah. So the discussion we had before that there's a lot of things happening in the total world which determine how the future will look at. Fast fashion came up because of the strong desire of all people to have very individual choice, being very flexible, and can buy stuff. The average clothing by women was worn only 7 times. Washing only 6 times, which also already started a discussion if you still need to have this high wash fastness requirements if you wash it only 7 times. But then when you talk to people like Adidas, they were telling me that almost 50% of all the sports wear that they were producing was actually worn as a fashion item and not as a sports item. And the moment you have it as a sports item, you need to be able to wash it many times because sports articles are washed many times. But if you wear it as a fashion item, it will be washed a lot less. So in order to judge what is the right solution, you should not only look at the cost of ink or the cost of the machine or the cost per meter, but all those other factors are coming into play. And like we were discussing before, I really have the feeling that for a part, COVID-19 is changing, doing some permanent changing on the way that people are looking at life, and that will have an influence on their buying behavior as well, which eventually also will have an influence on our industry. How are we printing our clothes?
Absolutely. I totally agree with you, Jos. Absolutely, completely right. How do you feel about the interior industry, the home furnishing sector? Do you see a huge growth of opportunity there for digital using pigment technologies, perhaps?
Yes. And you are mentioning one of the main hurdles. Why did the interior industry up till now not move so much to digital as the fashion industry did? One of the reasons was that in the beginning there were no wide format printer set, 3.2 meters, which you need for a bed sheet printer, was simply not there. Mm-hmm. And if it was there, then it was very unreliable because it was a challenge to keep the heads alive in this 3.2 meters movement. And the second one is that they are very much used to using pigments to print. And this was based on the fact that in rotary, pigment is one of the cheapest ways to print. So when you look at the bed sheets, which we already mentioned, then it was a way to have a very cheap printing. But for instance, on light fastness, they were much more applicable for curtains than other printing solutions. But in digital, pigments was a big challenge. And around this time, I'm publishing my next blog about pigments, digital pigments. And if I summarize it, I'm saying there that in the beginning there were technical challenges of especially around color gamut and about reliability and to keep the printer printing and not clogging the heads. Mm-hmm. Their technology has made big improvements over the last 10 years. The next challenge is the economical side because the pigment inks are still relatively expensive and you cannot fully gap the price difference between reactive inks and pigment inks just by economy of scale because by definition, because of the production process, pigments are more expensive to make. And the second thing is that the consumption of ink per square meter in pigments is considerably higher than on reactives. And that all results that printing 1 square meter of pigment, even today, is 2 to 5 times more expensive than reactive. So there are still challenges to be resolved. I do believe that we will make, we as a total world will make progress there, because one of the other big advantages of pigment is you don't need to steam and wash. And there the sustainability again comes into the discussion. So moving forward, pigment solutions will improve both further on the technical but also in the economical side. And that will also open up more possibilities for the interior printing side of the business. So our prediction in percentage growth for interiors is bigger than for fashion. But in absolute sense, fashion is still 8 to 10 times more a larger
leading
in digital than the interior is today.
Oh, that's great. It's great. How do you think print technology and its application will evolve over the next few years, Jos? Are we there or can we expect new innovations?
I think we're never there. I started my this interview by saying that Stork did a study in the 80s to wonder if there ever would be a new technology. I have been mentioning sometimes, I said maybe we should redo such a study again, because what if a printing technology comes up that replaces inkjet? Why would that not happen in 10 or 15 years from now? But even if we assume that it remains inkjet, then I think there is still one promise that didn't really come out up till now, is that in 2015, when companies like MS, Konica Minolta, and ourselves launched single-pass machines, EFI Rajani coming a bit later with it, but at that point in time, and at ITMA 2015, the general expectation was this is the next revolution. Everything will go to single pass. Well, we are now 5 years later. The amount of single pass machines in the world, probably is around 50, maybe even a bit less. So the big breakthrough for single pass printing in textile didn't happen like it happened, for instance, in the ceramics industry, where I was told that 95% of the ceramics are now printed digital on single pass machines. So there still has to be a big breakthrough, and that probably has to do with more reliable print heads and much cheaper print heads. So I think the big step ahead is if you look to a pike, there are 258 Samba print heads on it that have a commercial value of over €3,000. So there is, 800,000 euros of print heads in each pike. If that reduces significantly and the electronics to drive them become cheaper, then a single pass machine, instead of costing between 2 and 3 million, might go to between 1 and 1.5 million. Then I think that's another breakthrough for that technology. Mm-hmm. So and I expect that to happen in the next 5 years.
It's interesting, isn't it, Josh? Because when we all started this digital journey 20 years ago, the marketplace hadn't changed for quite some time. But if you just look at how the actual markets that digital is serving has changed just in the last 5 years, it's almost as though consumer behavior and that the need of retail have changed, that their needs have changed so much that the technology that we specialize in is having to adapt and change and innovate towards new marketplaces as they now change completely. Whereas, you know, perhaps the ceramic industry didn't, I don't know anything about the ceramic industry, but the textile industry itself has changed completely in the last 5 to 10 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, but what you see is that in the beginning, it was the technology was showing the market what it can do. But we now have come to a point that the market tells the technology what it should do.
Yes, exactly.
And that means that companies like ours, but also companies that produce printheads, for instance, they have to listen very carefully what do the customers want. And a company that makes printheads, their direct customer is the machine builder. But the machines builder customer is the printing company, and the printing company's customer is the brand, and the brand's customer are you and I. So it's quite a long chain from what do we really want to translate that back to what does that mean for which next printhead should I develop if I go back to the printhead companies?
Yeah, absolutely. We all have to collaborate more, form deeper partnerships, don't we? And as you say, whoever your consumer is, you have to get much, much, much closer to them.
Yeah, and that's I think that's not only in the printing industry, that's in general with everything. You see that the voice of the customer is the most important one. But there are 7 million voices on the planet, and they not all speak the same language, literally. But even it's difficult for us to sometimes exactly describe what do we really want. If I ask you, what do you want from your dress that you are going to buy in the shop, then you will come with a couple of arguments, which might today be different than next month, because today you are looking for a dress that you can wear to the office, and next month you are looking for a dress that you are going to wear to a special ceremony. So it is, but that's why that's the importance of keeping a very close contact with your customers and trying to understand from their behavior what are their implicit requirements and translate those back to the products that you are making.
Joss, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
I really have enjoyed our conversation. I'm very much looking forward to meeting you in person somewhere sometime soon.
Yeah,
well, and not in the virtual.
That goes both ways. And talking to a lot of our people in the industry, also people that we compete with, but we're working together with, everybody has the same feeling, like we're somehow isolated and we cannot share our feelings in a face-to-face conversation. And so I hope that in 2021, that part can return back to normal, that we can have a trade show where we can talk about things other than how fast is our printer going and what is the deepness of my black ink, but also talking about things like you and I now talked about. Because they determine also where do you need to go with the company.
They do, absolutely. We need to grow this industry, all of us together, don't we?
Yeah.
For the greater good, on a sustainable footprint. Fantastic. Josh, thank you so much. I am conscious of time. Thank you for today. And I'll make sure all of the links to SPG, etc., are all in the podcast notes. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye.